Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome to the show, the DL Link show, where we connect you through insights, information, and illumination on 101.9 Chai FM. Nikki Seberini with you until 1 o'clock. And how are you doing? How has your Thursday been so far? I do hope that you are taking care and looking after yourself in a world that seems so crazy at the moment. And as I always say, if you shut it all out just for the moment, for this moment, and take a deep breath and bring yourself into the place where you are, which is here and now, and just kind of do a reset and just look around you and create and connect with a certain amount of sanity that exists in this moment right here and right now. So our first guest, well, that was really just an introduction because he is hugely motivational. He has encountered many obstacles along the road and he has simply rise to the occasion. So Kobus the Viking Visser will be joining us shortly. He's a South African speaker. He's a life coach. He's a facilitator, firewalking instructor. He's also an author. His book will be released shortly. And then I am going to be talking to Dr. Arneka Riedelinghuis, who's a clinical and integrative homeopathic practitioner. And we're going to be looking at stress. And we're going to be looking at how we deal with stress in a natural way. The levels of stress in South Africa and around the world skyrocketing, ridiculously high. And what do? We pop more pills? Or do we try and look at our health and lifestyle and look at a more holistic approach? Well, let's see what Dr. Arneka Riedelinghuis says. That'll be coming up a little bit later. But first and foremost, Kobus the Viking Visser. Kobus, welcome. So lovely to have you on the show.
Good morning, Nikki. Oh, yeah, good afternoon. It's an honor to be here. I'm glad to be back on Chai FM. So it's, I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Oh, fantastic. So you've been on before. You're a friend of Chai FM. Welcome. Great to have you back. And of course, you know, the starting point today is if we go back to the 17th of April, it was World Hemophilia Day. And the World Hemophilia Day, there was a theme for this year being fair access for all, recognition of all blood disorders. And for you, you have a great synergy and a connection with the World Hemophilia Day because you yourself have hemophilia. So just tell us about that, Kobus.
Yeah, Nikki, I was born with hemophilic, and hemophilia is mainly found in men, and recent days they found that some women can also be hemophiliacs. Now, just to give you an idea, when I was born, the age expectancy at that time was 11 years. And so since then, a lot of things have improved in the medical field that gave us a longer time to live our lives to have a longer life expectancy, so if I have to say it like that. Now, for the people to understand what a hemophilic is about, hemophilic is, another word, is a bleeder as well. It means our blood doesn't clot easily. And there's certain deficiencies in hemophilia that our blood body doesn't produce. One is a factor 8 deficiency or a factor 9, or that you even get something called von Willebrand. So it all sort of falls in the same category. Now, I'm hemophilia 8, and you also get a certain severe scale. So like I am less than 1%, so I'm basically 0%. My body doesn't produce any factor 8 at all. Now, what does this mean is when I just get a cut means I will just keep bleeding. My blood doesn't have the things to stop the bleeding. And so I have to intravenously give myself an injection to be able to stop the bleeding, basically, the clotting of the bleeding. Now, just to give the listeners out there, the challenge that we face is the older we get, with all of the bleedings of the years in our joints, because we mainly bleed in our joints, is that the blood is almost like poison for your cartilage. So it sort of eats away the cartilage or destroys it. Then it's like food for your bone. So it makes your bone sort of grow and then sort of disintegrate because it becomes bone on bone. So it grinds on each other. Now, just to give you an idea, I can't straighten both of my elbows. I don't have any supination. I can't, have my palms up. It's not possible. Both my ankles is in such a way that there's no more ankles at all. And just to give an idea, in 2015, I ended up being in a wheelchair, couldn't walk. And, you know, this is the impact that it has on my life. So I know I've been speaking a lot, Nikki. Anything you want to ask before I
go? Wow. Listen, there's so much. There is so much, Kobus. And I suppose I want to go right back to the beginning. You say you were born hemophiliac. How did you know? Was it in the family? How did you know that you had it?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. I think the one thing that is important is some families don't know. It just comes out that they find out that their children are hemophiliac. You know, it's by easily bruising, sort of bleeding very easily. Now, luckily in my family, my parents knew that we had hemophiliac in our family. So I know some uncles were hemophiliac and some were born that died at birth that they found out was hemophiliac, you know, because they didn't know. So luckily we knew. So when I was born, my parents had the test done and they found out that I am a hemophiliac. So how it works is the woman is the carrier of the gene. Okay. And it usually then carries over to the males. And then the males are sort of the ones with the symptoms in the end of the day.
Gosh. I mean, I'm looking again, so many questions, but I'm just looking at the numbers and because it really is very rare. So there are only 300,000 sufferers in the entire world. And apparently in South Africa, something like 2,300 diagnosed hemophiliacs, but people estimate there are about 15,000 undiagnosed. So I'm wondering, Kuba, so it was in the family, you were born, you had the tests. Your blood doesn't clot. You're little. You're running around. You're doing things. I'd love to know how your parents managed that with you. How did they tell you? Did you feel different? Did you feel like you couldn't do what everyone else did? Did your parents wrap you in cotton wool? What was your experience growing up with this hemophilia?
Yeah, they sort of did cotton wool. I remember when I had to crawl, they put like sponges underneath my knees to be able to crawl. I would get easily bruised. The challenge they had was the teachers thought they were mishandling me. You know, they were abusing me. So they had to constantly explain that they're not abusing me with all of the bruises. Yeah, so in a sense, I was stopped from doing a lot of things, not being able to play sport, not being able to do extreme activities. And so that had an impact on on them as my parents, but also a big impact on me. Mentally, it had a big impact on me because I never had that confidence, fear of everything, constantly not feeling good enough. Just to give an idea, I live in pain 24/7. When I wake up in the morning, I'm in pain because I don't have ankles and joints anymore. So I live in pain. And other things that comes with this is that depression comes. Because, yeah. You know, if you're constantly in pain. So it's this constantly growing and getting older and facing all of these challenges because it's not hemophilic anymore. It's all of these extra things around. Give you an example, Nikki. If I'm divorced and so I'm at a point now, if I have to find someone else, you know, just the moment I explain that I'm a hemophiliac, it becomes a big decision for the other person to say, do they want to be with me with the potential that I might be in a wheelchair again in my life?
Sure. Wow. That's quite something to contemplate. That's something to consider. I mean, you know, normally you think when you're about to go and meet someone, is this person my kind of person? You know, I mean, will we get on? Will we relate? And as you say, you've got all these other things to consider, Kobus, and yet you go out. You are a speaker. You're a life coach. You're this facilitator. You are a firewalking instructor because I'd love to talk to you about firewalking. And of course, now an author. So how did that begin, Kobus? How did you decide that you were going to use this, which you live with daily, to, first of all, how did you rise above it so that, yeah, you could then go and share it with other people and change other people's lives?
We all have a moment in our life that defines us, that put us on a path, a catalyst moment, like on the hero's journey, the call.
Yeah.
Mine was when my first son was born and got to the hospital and I couldn't pick up my son. I don't have any muscles. I have pain in my elbows. I'm just sad that you can't see it now. But I couldn't pick up my son and I couldn't hold my son. And as he grew up, it was difficult for me to play with him because I was constantly in pain or I have bleeds in my joints. And the impact this had was the moment we were expecting our second child. We didn't know if it's a boy or a girl. And he was drawing this picture and there was two babies and he made a cross over the one baby. And he comes to me and says, "Daddy, I want a little brother that can play with me because you can't." And he came to me and I had a cross over me. And that moment changed my life. And he said to me, "Dad, you are dead to me." And he was 4 years old. And that moment made me realize, do I want to live or when I die? And I rather, before I decided to die, my friend invited me to a retreat. And at this retreat, we had the experience of walking on fire and my mind just exploded. It's like, I didn't get burned, Maniki. I didn't. And I'm like, how's this possible? And it just put me on the path to go and study and learn all of this. And then I came back and I decided to share this with other people because it had such a big impact on my life.
Wow. Well, I mean, what a story, Kobus, as you say, that moment with your son and then going on this retreat. And that has always intrigued me about this walking on fire. I mean, there's this physiological thing. If you expose your skin to hot coals, it's going to burn. I mean, it's physics, is it not? So are you saying, Kobus, that the power of the mind is so strong that it can prevent you from being burnt? And if so, was this what made you realize that there was so much more you could achieve in your lifetime?
To give an idea, the fire burns at 500 to 600 degrees Celsius when we walk on it. Now, aluminium melts at 250. According to doctors, at 150, you get third degree burns. Now, imagine you walk over that and there's no burn underneath your feet, right? Now, yes, there's physics and we can go into more detail of it. But, you know, on this journey, I've learned to even stand on fire. To give you an example, to disprove the physics, to say, you know, if you can, I can even stand on it. And it just made me realize how powerful our mind is, that we need to apply this. There's a quote by Gandhi that says, everything starts with a belief that becomes our thoughts, that becomes our words, that leads to our actions, our habits, that is our values, and that ultimately becomes our destiny. Now, if I can show you that you can walk over fire and I can change that belief, right? What other beliefs do we hold on so much so that we never question? Because I give you an example. I ended up being in a wheelchair in 2015. The doctor said, "Quivers, we have to fuse both your ankles. We have to replace both your elbows. That's your reality. That's your destiny." And because I've walked on fire before, I said to myself, but there must be another way. If I couldn't burn, how can I get out of this situation? So for a two-year journey, I was in this wheelchair trying to motivate people and getting them to walk on fire. And then they laugh and they say, but that, is that why you're in a wheelchair, you know? And so we always made jokes about it. However, Nikki, if we apply these philosophies, and I know you believe in it as well, is that we apply it on a daily basis. We live by it. And through this whole process, I had the opportunity to set myself a goal. And I went to climb Kilimanjaro and I did it with my crutches. And to show people that no matter how you are physically, if you put your mind to it, you can achieve anything.
Wow. Okay. This is amazing, Kobus. So let's break it down. You're in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Your doctor says this is your destiny. You have had experience walking on fire. This idea playing in your mind, wow, if I can do that, what else can I do? What else can I shift? How can I alter things in my life? And this was all before climbing Kilimanjaro, because I think it was in 2018 you then decided to climb Kilimanjaro and you do this in crutches. So if we had to break it down, for people who are listening, because it's all very well, we talk about Gandhi's quote, and I love his quote, and we talk about the power of the mind, and I thoroughly and I fully believe in that. But for people who are listening right now, who think, well, okay, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to change my thoughts. I'm trying to change my reality. I'm trying very hard. There's some people who are very ill who are listening right now. What do I do? How do I do it? Kobus, and I know that this is what you teach, but where do people start? If we had to start with the small little things, where do people begin? Where does it start?
You know, on Kilimanjaro, we learned something called pole pole, slow, slow. It's one step at a time. And it's focusing on just giving that next step. But before we give that next step, we need to know what is it we want in our life, right? Do we want something better? Because it becomes then a choice. We have to choose that change. We have to choose to go to the gym, for example. Now, I had to choose to change this. And my question comes to people is to say, I think it was Matthew McConaughey that said that his biggest hero is himself 10 years from now. Now, if you could dream and see yourself, would you want to be 10 years from now? And you bring it back. What is the changes we need? And what is the steps that we need to take? What's that first step that we need to take? For example, I want to go to the gym. I need to realize that I want to go to the gym, for example, that it will change my life. But be able to do that, we are not meant to be able to do it alone. And this is why I believe this is what my calling is. And I think you as well, Nikki, I've seen what you do as well, is that people need people to help them through this guidance. We need a coach. We need someone to help us through this process and keep us accountable and responsibility. So the main thing for me is for people is first choose that you want to change, right? That you want to have a better outcome. Then secondly, is find someone that can guide you, a mentor or a coach. That's the biggest step. Because then you can bring the changes. But guess what? If you're going to do it yourself, you're going to get tomorrow and say, oh, I don't feel like it today. I'm going to do it the day after. And I think that is what helped me with Kilimanjaro. I had one person come to my house every day and say, get up. We're going to walk to the door and back. And I did it. And I'm in pain. The next day, I said, let's see how far you can go now. Out of the door, we would 100 meters and come back. They would come and keep me accountable. No matter how tired I was, how much I wanted to complain, they made me get up and moved, right? And that put me on the process. It started with one step.
So have that. I love that. So the first thing is identify what you want and then have people to support you in the process. Have this mentor, have someone, have a group of people who are going to support you. So when it came to climbing Kilimanjaro and you had people say, let's just start with that first step, as you say, pole pole, did you do it with a whole team of people, Kobus? And how did you manage yourself when you were climbing with crutches when that pain did hit and when the thoughts came, or maybe they didn't come, like, can I take the next step?
Yeah, I had lucky. I had seven people that was friends that decided to climb with me, and we motivated each other with 35 angels, I call them, the porters that helped us to climb. Every day it was a challenge. Every day, the first 2 days, your mind is so busy, constantly talking to yourself, how far can I do this? Is this possible? And only from day three, it started silencing to a point where there was no. There was no voice in my head. And all that I could focus was on the present moment, on giving just the next step. Because if I looked up, the mountain was too big. It seemed too impossible for me after, even on day three to think, I'm climbing up this mountain. And yet I still need to get through today. And so what it taught me is I had a guide come back to a coach that was with me. Secondly, a support system where I had my friends constantly checking in. Kobus, have you drink your water, have a snack. So there was constantly that check-in. And then thirdly was for me to realize I know where I was going, but all that I had to do is look down. I remember one of the porters said, Kobus, you're constantly complaining how far, etc. All that you need to do is look down. Can you at least see your next step? And I look down, I say, yes, I can focus on my next step. So that's all that you have to do. Just give your next step. And I constantly did it. And before I knew it, we would be at our camp. And I'm like, wow, that was not so bad at all. And so that became my focus, giving my next step.
Yeah, looking up, seeing where you're going, but looking down and just doing it one step at a time. Kobus, what is your message? What do you want people to know? What do you want to share with people?
First, there's three things I want to share with people. One is unconditional love. And one way that I teach people is called a hug. And the power of a hug is for us to connect with each other again and give each other love. And how it works is a three-step process. One is to make eye contact. In South Africa, we have a beautiful word that says, in Zulu, that says sawubona. And so when you make eye contact with someone, it's just to tell them and say, I see you. You know, you are seen. You're not alone. Mm-hmm. And then the second step is to hug heart to heart. And there's even the Heart Math Institute talks about how powerful your energy of your heart is. But it's also because if we want love, we have to give love. And the most powerful organ is your heart. And then we hug heart to heart. And then the third step is the breath of life. We both breathe in and breathe out together in that moment so that you connect. There you're doing it as well. And to connect with people, because I say to people, it's not about you. You don't know who needs to feel seen and needs that physical connection and touch and hug. So that's the first step. And that leads me to one thing where I almost died on the mountain and came back, is to tell people to live without regret, because I almost died on the mountain. I was sort of reborn on the mountain. And then it's to go through a life and live with, don't regret in 10 years that you should have changed 10 years ago, or you should have told that one person that you love them, or your dad or your mom or your children. My challenge is to parents is to tell your kids that you love them. That's to show them. Some of them want to hear it. And then, because my dad only now, when he's in his 60s, for the first time in my life, told me that he loves me. And I craved it my whole life. So tell people that you love them. And then thirdly, you have one life. Do, and this is my phrase, whatever it takes. Go do whatever it takes. Stop living and blaming the government and the economy and people around you that you don't have what you want. Go and create it. Do whatever it takes.
Love that. Wow. Thanks, Cobus. So do you put all this passion? Have you put all of this passion or these ideas, what you want to share with the world, connecting with human beings, doing whatever it takes, deciding one step at a time, etc.? Have you put all of this wisdom into Walking Through Fire, Whatever It Takes, your first book? You've written this book. What was the purpose behind the book? And yeah, what can people expect?
Yeah, I do it at all my events with the fire walking and, you know, every activity that I do. And the reason why I do the book now is I wanted to do the book after my climb on Kilimanjaro. And then just life happened and started getting busy and never did it. And then end of last year, I went through a challenging time, a depression time as well, because of pain and not being able to move and just facing that constant, you know, battle of the mind. Mm. And when one thing came up and said, I haven't written my book yet, and I challenge people, I've gotten my dad to do it now as well, is to write a book, because it's your legacy. It's what you leave behind. And I realized it's my legacy, and that started me on the journey to create this book as my legacy that I'm leaving behind. Because imagine, Nikki, that if you could read a book written by your great-grandmother and your mother or your great-great-grandmother or father, what impact would have that had on your life? And that made me realize, even if people don't buy it, for example, at least my sons will read it and their sons, because it becomes something like a guidebook for them. And if other people like it, they will give it to their sons and children. And so it became a thing of sharing my memoir with all of these lessons and with all of these experiences for people out there to really go live without regret and share the love, unconditional love to others.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. And I'm wondering, Cobus, at such a young age, you're a young man to be writing your memoir, to be writing your legacy, because you've had, right, this, wow, all this experience, you've had to overcome so much. But in the process of writing it, and you say that you hit this low point last year, did you find that as you started to write the memoir, it became you, it just made you more conscious and more aware? So you were kind of writing about your past, but all the time, I suppose, thinking about the future from this point, from the legacy. Did it shift anything inside of you while writing the book?
Yeah, it just gave me more books to write. it did a big shift. And I think once you start reflecting on your life, and I think we should do it constant process in our life to focus and reflect. And it brought up such a lot of emotions during this journey of my life and the challenges that I faced, that I realized that I'm not living for myself anymore. This is now for other people, to inspire other people. It's bigger than what I think it is, because what if I just die today and I leave nothing behind? I don't do that impact that I'm called to do and that purpose, etc. And so it just ignited that fire in myself again to say, you know, this needs to be done and I need to reach as many people as possible. You know, one thinks about Tony Robbins and one thinks about all of these famous gurus. And I'm like, what do I need to do? And that becomes my future that I want to face. And it's not to say that I want to be like them, but can I do the same impact as they have done around the world? Can I reach 20 million people in the next 5 years, if not more? And so that just gave me just a bigger vision, a bigger goal. You know, it's not Kilimanjaro anymore. It's sort of like an Everest now.
Wow, that's amazing, Kobus. Well, listen, thank you for coming onto the show today. I'm sure that you've inspired lots of people, you know, breaking down a few things, and maybe you've just lit something inside of someone that needed the lighting. And hopefully, we'll speak again. I know that the book is being launched in July, but you are available for talks and walking on fire and if people want to get hold of you, I presume they can reach you on your website.
Yes, Nikki, they can. And for the listeners, it's Kobus with a C, so it's kobusvisser.com. And I just want to say, Nikki, thank you for taking the time to share this and to make awareness not only about my story, but about people out there that lives with hemophilia, and not only just maybe hemophilia, but any disability, is to realize that we also need connection. We also need love. We also need support. You know, yes, we might be ego and strong, but for me, the main thing is something is ringing. It's just to say, go make a difference in the people around you and people with disability as well. Give them the love they need. And thank you again.
Oh, Kobus, thank you so much. Take care. Go well. I hope all goes well with your book as well. Kobus the Viking Visser, renowned South African speaker, life coach, facilitator, and fire walking instructor.